Torg Eternity Delphi Council debriefings, where the storm has a name. We are your hosts, Lehman, Jay, and Mark. And today we'll start off with a couple of emails that we got. And you too can email us at torgdcd@gmail.com. You can ask questions. We'll answer the questions to the best of our ability. You can give comments, and we will comment back. So let's go ahead on this first email from Andy. It says, "Hello, gentlemen. Firstly, thank you for the show. It's been great for helping me through night shifts. I used to play Torg back in the day and have fond memories of it. I recently picked up the new edition and a fair few source books, which for some strange reason is getting hard to get a hold of in the UK. Anyway, my main reason for messaging, besides stoking your egos as well as deserved praise, is to ask if you'd ever consider doing an episode on just darkness devices, as I find them to be the most fascinating facet of the world. I'd love to hear your discuss on how darkness devices appear in your game, and if you used their machinations against or with each other as part of your plots. I like the idea that darkness devices are vast country, planet-sized machines all hidden in another dimension, and that the physical item is merely its connection to our realm. This, of course, gives me the idea of players' journey through a darkness device to get back home, back to scribbling ideas. Thanks again, guys, and keep up the good work. Cheers, Andy." So thank you very much, Andy. As for darkness devices, I think those are cool. We have mentioned them a few times, but mostly in side by side with their current High Lord. But I think maybe we could go on an episode or so about a darkness device and maybe give ideas or some things that we might have done or have heard being done by other game masters on making their own darkness devices or stuff. So, yeah, that sounds like a good topic. So you might hear about that in the future. Jay or Mark, did either of you have any comments for a darkness device episode?
You mean a darkness device deep dive?
Yes.
So the 4Ds. Yes. Yeah, I mean, you could look at how each one operates, how they're all a little bit different, and even mechanical, like how they work too. Because
right.
There's some things that are similar to all of them, and then some that are unique to each one as well. My group never really, like, I haven't really had to deal with the darkness devices too much directly, because once my group got, like, finished beta into Gamma, we kind of, like, reset, made new characters and go through it. So they were, like, just getting to the point of attracting the notice of darkness devices. And some of my players still don't even know what they are. So it's kind of funny. It got introduced. It got mentioned offhand in one of the other games that I was playing, and some players were like, "What?" So they're neat because it's always nice to peel back another layer. It's like, oh, there's all this going on, but there's really the High Lord. Oh, there's actually the darkness device.
Right.
Oh, actually, it's so, you know, all these other
nameless
things.
One.
Yeah. So I think they're cool. They haven't really been detailed too much in the Torg Eternity yet, so there's definitely a lot of room. I'm sure we all have our own personal theories, like Andy's, one of them being planet-sized. For me, mine is sort of that the Nameless One, being like the force of unreality, can't actually make anything, so the darkness devices are actually like corrupted by Eternity just to exist at all. So there's sort of varying levels of, so even like the darkness devices, which are like the creations of the Nameless One, are kind of like blasphemy against it just because they exist. And that's where you get sort of like the varying levels, and things like Ebon Uskrux is maybe a little more corrupted than some of the other ones. So yeah, it's definitely a cool topic that we could get into.
Mark, did you have any thoughts about Darkness Device episode?
I think it's a great idea. Oh wait, an excuse to talk about Torg? Okay, fine. Twist my arm. To me, the Darkness Devices always have seemed like more of an embodiment of a fragment of the Void, beyond anything else. Just because, as Jay pointed out, the idea of the Void is that it destroys things, it can't really create or make anything. And so, how do new things show up on the bad guy's side? Because at the top you have the Void, right? And that destruction. And the Darkness Device's goal is, in my opinion, is the ultimate destruction. And they bring that about through the way that, whatever, each one is a unique flavor and an element of the Void. If you wanted to pull them all together, you would see, like, the heart of evil. And instead, each one is a little different flavor of it. And you get some of the character of the different Darkness Devices through several of the mega adventures. Fires of Ra, you encounter Denial Empire Darkness Device. In Cyber Papacy, you spend a lot of time encountering Cyber Papacy Darkness Device. I like to play them more of, while we see them as, we call them a Darkness Device, that brings up in your head an idea of an inanimate object. That, how does that have a personality? I like it more to think of them as more of like the genie in the lamp, because the Darkness Device is 100% as much of an intellect as the High Lord. And in most cases, the Darkness Device is more conniving than the High Lord ever thought to be. Mm-hmm. And if you read any of the adventures or the missions that have the Darkness Devices play a part in them, like Unhallowed Data is great for this, because you get a lot of the motivation behind the Darkness Device in that one. You get a little bit in the one that appears in Fires of Ra, but you get to see a little bit of the flavor of the, and I'd like to see, as Jay pointed out, there's not a lot of stuff out there on the Darkness Device themselves. You could write a lot just on the Darkness Device, which I think arguably might need to be done, just because, again, as Jay pointed out, there's layers of this structure built up, and you're like, oh, this is the, you like in the Nile Empire, you've got the villain, or you got the lieutenant to the villain. You got the thug, you got the mook, right? You got this hierarchy that keeps going up the chain. And every time you pull back a layer, there's this, the next level up. And that's part of the game. Part of the fun is to defeat the level that you're on. And then, oh, there's another bad guy. Oh, there's another bad guy. The Darkness Device is in there, and they're the power behind the throne. The High Lord, in my opinion, is there to take the arrows for the Darkness Device. And the face of evil, if you will, so that everybody focuses on the High Lord, so that when the good guys come to defeat whatever cosm you happen to be playing in at the time, all of the effort, power, and attacks are going to go towards the High Lord. The Darkness Device is back here going, oh crap, they're going to beat him, I got to make my escape. And the Darkness Device sacrifices the High Lord to go, and then goes and find, like, I don't want to give anything away, goes and finds another High Lord.
Okay, so it does sound like we have a lot to talk about with Darkness Devices, so that probably pop up in a future episode. So thank you very, very much, Andy, for writing us. The next email we have is from Oliver, who wrote us not too long ago. It says, hi, Lehman and team, Mark and Jay, or whoever is participating. So yes, it is Mark and Jay. I've got some new questions. So the first one is about the surge mechanic. What does contribute to the surge roll? Do buffs, powers of teammates make you a 1 or 4 case contradiction? Example, a teammate evokes awareness in giving all party members a +2 physical defense in a 10-meter radius. Are the teammates' surge rolls now affected by having a power active on them that is beyond their axioms and possibly the cosms that they are in right now? Second example, teammate uses a shield drone or his high-tech shield via shield wall perk to give the bonus to a teammate of lower tech axiom. Does this make the teammate a 1 or 4 case for surge rolls? Pulp powers like force fields, abilities of starred perks for other players besides the one having the perk. Example, using dark ointment or enchantment potion. Aurorsch page 15, CRB page 93. On non-Orishan Storm Knights as the alchemist is a star perk. It is always a one case contradiction outside of Aurorsch. Does this create a four case for any non-Aurorschans outside of Aurorsch for surge or any rolls affected by the alchemist, or does the effect become non-contradictory? So that's the first question. That was a long question, but it was a bunch of different specific examples asking kind of the same question, which to break down from what I understand this is one Storm Knight basically gives some type of effect to another Storm Knight that is either contradictory to the place they're in and or to the Storm Knight that has received that effect. When a surge comes up, that is a contradiction check that you roll a d20. If you roll a 1 and you're a 1 case, then you'll disconnect. And if you roll a 1 through a 4 and you are a 4 case contradiction, then you disconnect. The two questions you ask yourself to make sure is, am I currently a 1 to 4 case, is the reality that I'm in contradictory to me? And the second one is, does any equipment I have contradictory to me? So that's kind of the two questions there. So as the line developer, my rationale is no, it would not make the person who is receiving it, but if it was contradictory to the place that you're in and the person who did it fails their surge roll, then whatever effect they're having on you goes away. Such as you have a, you said high-tech shield, so you have a Cyber Knight that is doing the shield wall on somebody else. He disconnects. Well, he can't do the shield wall on anybody, on that other person. Or the person who has that miracle or that buff spell that's in that radius, that will be there as long as that person doesn't disconnect. If the person who is the originator of that disconnects, then it would go away. It does make it kind of very interesting on things that kind of, where if you have a buff that's in a radius, that's kind of an ongoing thing, and if somebody hands something across, like a potion, hey, drink this, you can see in the dark now, that would be something I would say is a little very specific. And I would say GM's call. How do you want to play your game? Because on those, I could kind of see it both ways. The alchemists are supposed to carry them. If they give them to other people, they become inert. So I kind of see that in my own view, is since they can't just pass them out and have somebody else carry them for days and weeks and months, they have to keep them on themselves, that when they hand them out, they're still kind of connected to them. So if the effects are going, if you really wanted to be a stickler for, okay, your potion of that lets you see in the dark, the alchemist who gave it to you disconnected, so that drops, that would be the way to go if you decided it's not worth the, you know, telling the person, hey, now your character can't see in the dark anymore, or you want to make that then become part of the character. That's the weird, strange stuff that happens in Torgs when you have multiple realities intermingling. But for the straight effects of somebody is actively doing something else, or it's some spell or miracle that somebody produced, then the person who did the miracle, that is what should count for the disconnection, not the person who is having the effect on them. So that is kind of, for now, official. Year two might change things or might clarify things, but now we'll go to how other people would run this. So, Jay, what would your ruling be?
Pretty much the same. the idea being that it's the person doing it that matters. There's a clear delineation between tech and mystic powers, in that, you know, mystic powers, you could kind of just like pump them out. Tech, you've got to get the thing and then you've got it. And then once you've got it, you can use it infinitely. But you do potentially need to check for contradictions each time. Whereas, and that goes for potions and things too, like just normal magic potions. But then like spells and psionic effects tend to be like you have to roll each time, and it's each time's its own thing. So that's part of why I think with tech, like weapons, armor, things like that, those would count towards a surge, because it's sort of been released into the wild and it's now on you, right? Whereas the effect from a spell was cast by someone else, it's really their spell. And you also have to think about this a little, like, how much of a headache do you want this to be? Because these examples kind of go into the more obvious stuff, but think about it. If an enemy optant or Gotak or something diminishes, or curses rather, curses like multiple members of the party, that could suddenly make, by the question here, if that counted, not only are you cursed, but you've got to, unless you are a high spirit character, like you potentially could be, you know, could disconnect. I mean, curse isn't probably more magic, like a magic spell would probably be more equivalent.
An effect of some kind.
Yeah, like if you're affected by a magic spell and you are a living land character with a magic axiom of one, that's just going to make you surge more, like, now. So I don't think you want to introduce that level of fiddliness into the game, because it could really get out of control. That said, I do kind of agree with Lehman about the whole potion thing, because this literally has come up in my game since I've had four alchemists go through my campaign. So there's been a lot of them. And that was basically what I said. Those counted, I just treated them like potions, essentially, because it's not worth keeping track of, like, oh, like, if, sure, okay, if the alchemist disconnects, then now this doesn't work. But, like, in reality, wouldn't you think, like, if you bought your Eilish healing potion, maybe the guy who brewed this whenever right, disconnects right. Someday and it just doesn't work? It's not worth even thinking about. So, yeah, I would agree. GM's call for that kind of stuff, but on the most part, effects like from spells and things would not add to it. Gear would add to it, in my opinion.
Yeah, and actually, it's going to somewhat be, before I ask Mark, somewhat be relevant for the next question, because I just thought of it when you kind of explained the Isle healing potion, you know, magic potion, versus something that a player character has made, a Storm Knight has made. If you get that weapon, that magic weapon, and carry it around, that's your gear. And then it's just like, if the tech axiom is too low, your magic axiom is too low, it's going to cause you to disconnect, not the poor guy who, you know,
who enchanted it,
as well as for spells and miracles and psionics and etc. That would be a really easy and not good way of saying, okay, this bad guy invoked curse on you, now you disconnect because you're 4Ks, and now you don't have to worry about the curse because it stops working because it's contradictory. So that's kind of not where it should be going. Now, if that person, he disconnected, then that would be something else. But for the Surge and for the Storm Knights disconnecting, unless I would say it's a physical or, you know, at least started off physical with, say, a potion, it's not you. It's the original.
It's not reliance on another individual.
Right. So, Mark, what are your thoughts on the Surge with all the one person producing an effect on somebody else?
So I think we're going to stick with the table variation. Your mileage may vary up to the GM's call kind of answer, because this is one of those esoteric things where we can make the statement about one thing that's very clear cut, right? Mm-hmm. The magic sword, very clear cut. I'm holding it, I'm swinging it, I'm using it. If my magic axiom is not high enough, that's a contradiction to me. If I'm in a realm where magic is not a thing, then I'm 4Ks, and now we got a problem, right? That's real obvious, because it's like you said, it's a piece of gear. I'm possessing it. I'm using it. Guns. I'm from Isle, and I pick up the M60 and I start cranking rounds with that marmot. Contradictory, right? But is that a cool image? The dwarf with the machine gun is an absolute cool image, and I have a dwarf, and he always requisitions a marmot because that, to me, is a cool image. Yeah, I get it that it's contradictory. I don't care. That's Torg. I like playing Torg that way because it's fun. Where we get into where your table variation may vary, and it's your cosm, your rules, your way, to a degree, is when we start getting into this kind of thing where it's effects. And, okay, on a spell where you are concentrating on the effect of the spell, that to me is a little more clear cut. I am the spell caster, and I am concentrating on an effect that I have put on Liam and Jay. They didn't do it. They're taking advantage of the thing that I'm putting on them, whatever it is, but there's nothing, they're not holding a sword. Magic might be contradictory to them, but they didn't, you know, if you want to personify reality, like, no, I didn't touch it. It's not me doing it. It's that other guy over there. I'm okay. Right. But can you make this case that they're using it and taking advantage of it? Well, yeah, I made their strength go up. Magic is contradictory, but they're hitting somebody and taking advantage of that increased strength. So again, can you make that argument? You could. I'm going to fall back on the idea, though, that this is an effect. And so, no, you're not a contradiction. You don't have to surge. Now, switch it around where I cast that same kind of spell, but instead of a concentration, now there's a duration. And now you have this magical effect that's on you. Different. I put it there. I'm not concentrating on it anymore. I'm doing stuff over here. Can you make the case that if I disconnect, I've already done my thing, and it's going, and that should just be you and not me. You could make that case, and if you want to play that way, that's fine, but you should, in my opinion, if you're going to do that, you should make that clear to your players up front, because that's different from the way that most people will run this system. Again, that spell's still in effect, and so I would not make Liam and Jay a contradiction because I put an effect on then went on my way. I would, the way that Liam and Jay both outlined it, if I disconnect, that effect goes away. Now you've got additional bookkeeping to, as I like Jay's word, how fiddly do you want to make it? You can get overcomplicated and forget stuff real easy with this. But contradictions are listed in the core rules on 178, and the very first thing that it says, whenever a character uses tools or abilities that are beyond the axiom limits of a realm or their own reality or are dependent on world laws from a different cosm, she creates a contradiction. That's talking about me doing something. That's not talking about I'm doing something to Jay and Liam and they didn't do it. I did. So as far as the Surge is concerned, they're not a contradiction because I did something to them. That's how I read that. And if you want to go further into it, contradiction checks are usually part of a normal skill test, meaning you're doing something. The Surge, specifically because that's in the question, mm-hmm. right? The Surge is where we get into a little bit different. And I want us to segregate Surges away from a failure in like a one case contradiction on a skill test versus a four case contradiction on a skill test that I'm doing something and I roll a one or I roll a two or I roll a three mm-hmm. or a four. Because to me, I love the idea of a Surge being this little dust devil of reality and possibilities that swirls around and causes problems and causes problems for everybody. I am the oddball out in that I think a Surge ought to make everybody, even if you're a native to the cosm you're in, ought to cause everybody to have to roll, because the possibility wars are this in Torg Eternity. You've got this game system, this idea that cosms with contradictory ideas have overlaid our own reality. And so you have core Earth underlying everything. And then overlapping that, you've got Nile Empire, you've got Cyberpaps, you got Living Land, you got Arorsh, you got Tharkold, you got Pan Pacific, all this stuff, right? And so that, you know, we have this idea of storms at the boundaries of these things, creating red and blue lightning and sparkles and, you know, great tumults and all this stuff going on, right? Why not have this little dust devil spinoff? And even if you're a native of Core Earth, standing in Core Earth in a pure zone, and this little dust devil of reality comes whizzing by, it causes you a problem, because mixed into that little dust devil of reality is something that is contradictory to you, even though you're standing in Core Earth. And so, yeah, when a Surge comes up on the card, here we have, and that becomes to me, that's a unique feature of Torg Eternity. I don't do that, because I'm like the only person that I know of who has that opinion about Surges. And because I'm the only person that has that opinion, I get a lot of pushback when I try to play that way. And I just, you know, like, you know what? That's not a hill I want to die on. But that's my opinion about Surges. I like the idea, and I will continue to play. In my head, when Surge comes up on the card, that's what I see. I don't ask you if you're native. I forget and ask sometimes, but I'm not going to make natives of whatever cosm you're in roll the Surge, but doggone it, I think you oughta.
So that is an actual real good point that you brought up, that even though they are both contradiction checks, a Surge contradiction check is different than an active skill test that includes the contradiction test, because you are actively using something outside your reality and or the reality that you're in. So in those cases, I would have, if you get enhanced or something and you have I did something and now you get a plus one dex. So now your melee weapons is increased. So I swing my sword and I roll a one. I disconnect because I was doing something active with an effect that was not part of either my reality or the reality that I'm in. But for the Surge, it's a passive check, not an active check. And one of the things, if you go back to classic Torg and why Surges were put into Torg Eternity, was in classic Torg, every time you changed scenes or every time you changed reality, you would look at all your armor and your weapons and everything, and you would make a check for those. And it just became a little cumbersome. So instead of going, okay, I'm wearing is this, you know, under this, it just became here, we'll put it on the card. It says Surge. This is when you have your passive checks. So that is kind of the distinguishing. So I'm glad you brought that up, Mark. An active test against a skill with a difficulty number, that would be a little bit different than the Surge, which is a passive, no test involved, no difficulty number. It's just a straight check on a d20. And that's where the different terms, test and check actually mean something in Torg Eternity instead of a lot of games using one or the other and then people using both to mean the same thing. In Torg Eternity, they're actually separate. A test is a roll against a difficulty number, and a check is just a let's check to see if this thing happened or not. Contradiction test or check and other types of checks are just a mishap is a check.
So you are then advocating for if you are cursed and you make an attack, you could possibly disconnect.
No, he's not advocating for that.
But I mean, it's a penalty is the same as a bonus, right?
It's all affecting, yeah.
That's maybe a bit more than I would go.
I'm not doing that. That's more fiddly than I want to get. That's, wow, no. Uh-uh.
But yes, that is very, very fiddly. Where I've seen it in games is when somebody has a pulp power, like a skill increase or attribute increase, because then it's their power affecting them, or, you know, they have a cyber person has a cyber eye enhancement and it gives them a bonus on find, and then they disconnect that way. So those are those type of active tests. But yes, just figure if you make it in your game where the good stuff causes you to disconnect and then you don't get the good stuff bonus, that if the bad stuff's on you and you disconnect, the bad stuff would go away and not do that. So take both. Don't just do the one.
Be consistent.
Yeah, be consistent. That's a nice to make it fair across the board to your villains and your Storm Knights. Okay. So let's move on to the second question, which is availability of magic items in other cosms with magic greater than 13. Are magic items supposed to be buyable / requestable in cosms other than Isle, or is the nature of magic item specific to Isle? Thanks in advance, Oliver. So basically this is saying Isle has a ton of magic items that can be requested when you're going to Isle or from Isle or whenever your game master allows you to say, hey, I would like a magic item. But if you're going to Aurorsh or Nile Empire, and which other ones did we look at? Cyber Papacy, I think, were the three that we looked at before we started this. So you're going to those places. Would you be able to, one, buy, and two, request? So buying is using your own character's funds, money, perks, etc. to acquire something permanently. A request is asking the Delphi Council, hey, please give me this item to use during this adventure. If I don't use it up and I have it at the end of the adventure, I'll turn it back in. In cosms other than Isle. So, Jay, what would your thoughts be on this?
Yes, but so Isle isn't the only, like, as you said, Isle is not the only realm that has magic items. Even Core Earth has magic items, crystals mainly. But there's magic items in most of the source books that you can find, some spirit items instead, but we'll just use magic for this.
Mystic.
Yeah, but we'll specifically talk about magic right now, because that's what you said.
Fair.
So Isle is the only realm where magic is ubiquitous and basically available everywhere. Mm-hmm. Like, as similar to technology in most of the other higher tech axioms. So Isle is the only place I would probably allow you to buy magic items without a modifier. So the other realms that have magic items, you could get magic items from Core Earth. You could get magic items from Tharkult. Those drives and stuff, right?
And the old stuff that before the tech fell. Before the magic axiom fell.
And then the from Nile, there's a bunch of magic items. Ororsh, there's a bunch of magic items, cult items, that are in the source books. So, but in the main book, there's an often ignored table on page 139 about item availability. Mm-hmm. And in all of these other non-Eilish realms, I would basically say that any magic item you want would at least be rare. They're not common. They're not everywhere. They're not on the supermarket shelves. You have to know someone. You have to know some secret society or find somewhere. So that's going to make it difficult to locate it. And I might even take it up to a higher penalty depending, because there's a separate penalty if it's kind of like a military grade dangerous thing, especially if you're requisitioning it from the Delphi Council. So you can probably find some questionable individuals to buy a hand of glory from on your own, but the Delphi Council will probably look at you like, what are you doing with this? Now that said, the other thing I thought of is, while there will be magic items available in other realms, make sure that they are the magic items from those realms. It's not like you're going to be, even if the magic axiom covers it, they're not like swimming in plus one daggers.
Right.
Everywhere, right? That they all act a little bit differently. And I would actually, for Ororsh, even be tempted to lower the difficulty, like make it maybe not minus four, make it minus two, and make sure the occult items have some sort of drawback. I actually added a bunch of occult items in my Storm Knight's Guide to Monster Slayers, you know, that have some drawbacks and things. Many of them were kind of replaced when the actual source book came out. But that could give you some ideas for other things that fit the realm but haven't been published as well. So just make sure I would say you could definitely have magic items available outside of Isle, but you should not have Isle items available outside of Isle.
So, Mark, what are your thoughts on the availability of magical items and other realities with a good enough magic axiom?
So I'm going to just start where Jay ended and say that the point, part of what makes Isle is the everyday nature of magic. And it's just, you know, you get the way that you know, we get things done with, you know, power tools and the things that we go to the store and get this or the other, Isle does with magic. And it's just, it's everyday stuff in the home, whatever. That's part of what makes Isle. Just because a cosm like Nile or Cyberpapacy supports that magic axiom does not mean Eilish magic items are there. I would absolutely, I'm not talking about Torgonized Play now. I'm talking about Torg Eternity in general. I would absolutely not make Eilish magic items available in the Cosm just because the Cosm's magic axiom supports it. Now, if your adventure has the idea that an Eilish person is hiding in that Cosm and has this black market magic item shop, you know, and you're there for that purpose, that's a whole different, that's, you know, that's a one-off whole different story. But I would not set it up to the point where I'm strolling into the Cyber Papacy and I decide I want plus one magic items or potions of healing or these other things just because the from Isle, just because that axiom supports it. Now, put the Torgonized Play hat on. You can request items that are in the Cosm you are in or the Cosm you're going to. So it's got to be in the book. Eilish magic items are not in Ororsh's book. And the general stuff in the Core Earth book, or Core Earth, I call it the Core Earth book, Core book. Just because Isle's stuff appears in the Core book, if you're not in Isle, you can't request Isle magic items. From an organized play standpoint, they might be in there, but if you're going to Cyber Papacy, you cannot request healing potions, Eilish healing potions. Just that's how it works. So are they supported? Yeah, the magic axiom and cyber perhaps is high enough, so they're supported, some of them. But think about the chasm you're going to, and how is that set up? Cyberpapacy, magic's heretical. So anybody who's got it, they better not have it out in front of the church, or anybody who wants to get in good with the church, or anybody who has a low piety score and needs to raise that piety score by turning a heretic in. I mean, because I mean, does that...
Or any device hooked up to the GodNet.
Or the toaster. Don't let the blender know that you want to have, you have a healing potion. So... Yeah, it's part of what makes the cyber papacy. The cyber papacy is how they look at magic. As Jay pointed out before we got on, started the podcast, that's White Witch stuff. So if you want to introduce a White Witch, okay, I've decided I need healing magic. Okay, well, here's your NPC, your White Witch NPC that you're going to go now have some interaction with. Contact card. I would like to find an Eilish magic vendor in cyber papacy. Maybe you drop a contact card that I might allow,
hope
because
you're in
spending
Calais.
Huh?
And you hope you're in Calais then.
Yeah, well, but I draw, you know, I've you as the Storm Knight have spent a resource to try and make something happen, and to me that's the fun of the game, is I want the players to have agency in the game, and that's, you know, they drop that contact card and now all of a sudden Esmeralda shows up, and she is this hidden cyber witch that is on the run from the church, and she will exchange, if you help her, she will exchange, you know, whatever healing she has for you helping her, and this becomes a recurring, yeah, now your player has had some agency in your game, and I think you absolutely ought to allow that, because that to me is part of the communal building of the world that happens in Torg Eternity. The way that I would kind of, if you're kind of like, well, how do I figure this out? Okay, let's step it back into something that's a little more manageable. If you're not going to let, if I put on my Delphi Council hat and you're doing requisitions, or you're doing Streetwise to buy it from a vendor in the Cosm, would I, the GM, allow them to buy C4, C9, dynamite, law rockets, automatic weapons, or something along those lines that are mass casualty causing devices? The Delphi Council is sending you into a packed urban environment. They are, generally speaking, not going to give you blocks of C4 or law rockets or dynamite, because you're going into a suburban neighborhood. What do you think you need C4 for? No, we're not going to give you that. Now, if you're as a GM, you're like, I don't like to just heavy handed say no, I want to give them a roll. Okay, then use the item availability chart on 139. You can use that on the same principle of, instead of uncommon, rare, unique, which makes that number go up. You can use it on the idea of the Delphi Council's against you having this, because you have to work harder to convince them you're responsible enough to be given this amount of destructive power or this magic item, because those are very rare in the Delphi Councils. You know, you don't look like you're, as Liaman's example, you're going to disconnect and destroy this item and we're not going to get it back. So no, we're not giving you the Living Land character this item to go into the Living Land with, because this is contradictory to the place and to you. And so this isn't coming back. No, that's irresponsible of us. Oh, well, that's a +6 on the number. And so now I got to roll higher. If you nut the number up and you successfully get it, okay, maybe the GM says, well, I guess I got to give them the C4 or whatever the magic item is. Sure. If you just don't want to let them have it, don't let them have it.
So my thinking is similar. Definitely look at if it's buying, that to me is just game master call right there. The game master, anything that is able to be bought is going to be because there's a person, a shop or whatever, that the game master is okay with being there. And that could be, as Mark said, a connection card. Boom. Hey, I have a connection card. I'd really like to use it to to get in with somebody who owns a magic item shop or black market, you know, or you, I mean, this could be used for anything, but I understand we're just talking about magic. But buying and what's available in an adventure, that's a game master call. The requisitions is kind of where it's a little more open. And then my home game, I do have a whatever reality you're coming from and whatever reality you're going to. If there's any downtime, then it's can be your reality as well. If there's a long period of downtime between my sessions, like in game time. And that was something that before we started recording, I had stated that the Delphi Council isn't stupid on the mechanics of reality. So, you know, they're the ones who warned Stormbreak, don't pull up that stele. You haven't given, you know, the populace their glory. You haven't refilled them. We're ignored, and what they said was going to happen happened. They understand contradictions. And it shouldn't be that huge of a spoiler because it's like the very first thing and the first hook in the God Box. The reason they send Storm Knights to get to locate missing people is trying to get them back before they transform, and they know that the Storm Knights are going to have a much better resistance to transforming. So they understand transformation. They understand carrying things that are contradictory to that individual is going to give that individual a higher chance of at some point disconnecting and causing problems. So as both Mark and Jay pointed out, and I have used that chart where, you know, this is a common, this is a rare, it's, it gives you more difficulty, this, you know, next one. I can't remember how many levels there are, but there's quite a few levels. And then if they're beta, there's that chart in the beta player's guide that gives bonuses to it as well. So there's things to look for, bonuses, negatives. Is it available at all? Is the Delphi Council just going to say no because of the situation, who you are? I'm going to the Living Land, and I'm from the Living Land, and I want a magic item that, you know, costs a lot of money. How many magic items does the Delphi Council have laying, you know, how many whatever type of magic items does the Delphi Council have laying around that they can just hand them out like they're candy? So think of all that. Also wanted to do a little clarification on the aisle where magic is kind of everywhere. It's not quite like here everybody has a TV, right, or everybody has a washing machine. But it might be I have a washing machine, you know, a magic thing that does the washing machine's job. You have a magic machine that does sweeping like a vacuum cleaner. You know, Mark has a magic machine that does, you know, drills stuff. But every household has at least one or two common things that are just magical, whether they're, you know, passed down or get acquired, or, hey, I don't need this anymore, you want it, trade it, whatever. It's just that common. But it's not like everybody has the same types of, you know, it's not like all what we have. Everybody has crystal balls to watch Netflix. You know, that's what people in Isle do every day. You know, you might have one person.
Crystal ball network.
You know, one person might have it in a town or a city or something like that. But also flavor it when you go elsewhere. If you want that sword to request from O'Rourke or buy, and you're the game master, like, oh, do I want them to have it? Okay, but to get that bonus, they have to give themselves a wound, and then it lasts for a scene, you know, and the wound can't be healed. You know, it's a unhealable wound, persistent wound, and do stuff like that. That's kind of things that I would think about. Or it's not popular today, but once, and it wasn't like people loved them besides game masters, but I remember them, and I remember dealing with them, and the fun was sometimes overcoming cursed items which used to be just, you better identify those things before you put it on, because you put it on, who knows what's going to happen. You know, gross two sets of arms that, oh, great, now I got four arms. But then you get into battle and they start hitting you instead of the opponents. Or, you know, all there is lots of stuff out there to give ideas. Something like that, an aisle, would actually work with the darkness side of things, where, hey, there is so much common, items. Maybe there's a wizard out there, you know, who's just like, hey, everybody accepts magic items. I'm going to throw a few curse things in here, or a Rorsch. It fits right into there. Thark holds some, you know, pain devices and stuff, kind of like how a lot of the occult tech will you'll need to cause yourself some shock damage to give yourself ammo, you know, something like that for magic items, I think would be cool. So just kind of flavor it depending on which reality you're going with. So any last thoughts before we wrap up this email episode about reality or items, requisitions, darkness devices, whatever? So Jay, any wrap-ups?
You cannot requisition a darkness device. I have had that asked before.
I would like to specifically ask for Rec Pockin.
As far as you know, the Delphi Council does not have a darkness device.
Yeah, I think that last bit that you said was also very important, to make sure to flavor things appropriately, is sort of the big takeaway from it. I've also said in the past, like, I usually make the Streetwise rules to buy stuff more of like a little side adventure anyways. But yeah, I think that pretty much covers it. The only thing would be about the buffs and debuffs potentially causing contradictions, is just be very careful about that Pandora's box.
Yep.
It's one of those things where it's like, yeah, I could see how it would make sense, but then when you start going deeper and deeper, more like exceptions are going to crawl out, and it's just easier to say, you know what, I'm not worrying about it.
Right. Or or just have something, Surge rolls up, roll an effect Surge. Boom. All effects are down, or all effects are still up there. Something a little more easy to get to, but then we are definitely talking GM's call and table variation. So any last thoughts before we wrap up, Mark?
So the item availability, what you can do with that in, and what I think you makes sense for that is to look at it. You know, you've got surplus, common, uncommon, rare, and unique, and the modifier says -6 or more for unique. I would look at that as just, if I am a Storm Knight and I am requisitioning something that is not a contradiction to where I'm going and not a contradiction to me, and 13 or less or 12 or less or whatever it is, your number, whatever your number is, then it's common. And just run with that. If it's a contradiction to me or it's a contradiction to where I'm going, maybe it's a -2 and it's uncommon because I'm asking, and now they're paying a little attention. If it's a contradiction to me and it's a contradiction to where I'm going, maybe that's rare and -4 because now Delphi Council is going, you know, you haven't really thought about this, and we got to consider whether or not you're going to bring this, because as a requisition, you're borrowing something. Mm-hmm. You are borrowing an asset from the Delphi Council. That's, and that's a resource. And it's a, we don't keep track of this, but it should be, but the Delphi Council does, and they would know how many of them they have. Mm-hmm. Right. And so if that one doesn't come back, it's one less that they have to get to another team. You know, at which point, when you start looking at it going, I really don't want them to have C4 in a populated area. And so this becomes unique, and it's -6, -8, -whatever. But you got to, like Jay pointed out, you got to keep in mind that the beta tier requisitions, you can get a +5 on that. And so if people are willing to sit back and just go, you know, this is the only thing I want, this is all I'm going to get, I'm going to take a +5, they can, especially when you're beta tier Storm Knight, you got some juice for that kind of stuff, you can requisition quite a bit. So use that to your advantage if you want to.
I did have the pleasure of having a beta clearance arms dealer perk character in our group, and that was pretty ridiculous.
So, I mean, again, as a GM, you can just say no. Your players might get a little irritated at that, but, I mean, you can. Just I wouldn't swing that club too often because players get really irritated when you're always saying, no, you can't have it. Why not? Because I don't want you to. That's, I mean, can you? Yeah. Should you? Probably not.
Okay, well, thank you very much for either watching and or listening to this episode of the Delphi Council debriefings. You can also email us at torgdcd@gmail.com. And like this entire episode, we will read your email. If you have questions, we'll have answers. And if you have comments, we will comment back. Thank you very much, and until next time, we hope you have fun in your own Cosmiverse. Bye.